Welcome to the Classic Holdup Podcast, where we analyze media from the past. Each episode features a different host that brings a fresh take on a film, TV show, video game, or music album of their choice. What can we discover? Do old favorites have a shelf life? Will the classics hold up?
Hey, welcome back to the Classic Holdup. My name's Jonah, and I'll be your host for this week's episode. A little bit about me, I'm from Dearborn, a city about 10 minutes outside of Detroit, and I'm a senior here at Michigan State majoring in digital storytelling with a concentration in audio and a minor in business. Funnily enough, while I am majoring in digital storytelling, the creating of both auditory and visual media, when it comes to the visual side, I was never really into it like others. Until recently, I hadn't seen any Tarantino movies or other movies that would make you say, "Seriously? But that's a classic." I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that growing up, I was really a video games kid. But when I was watching TV, it was usually cartoons like SpongeBob, Fairly Odd Parents, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, to name a few. That has followed me to now, where most of the media I watch is actually animated, more specifically anime. This brings me to today's piece of media we'll be discussing, the original Dragon Ball series. Now, I know some of you clicked on the episode, excited to finally hear your favorite manga get discussed, but I actually want to walk it back for the folks who clicked on the episode and have no idea what Dragon Ball is, and for the others who have no idea what manga or anime are. To keep it brief, manga is the Japanese equivalent to comic books here in the States, and if we're going by that logic, anime would be the equivalent to cartoons. Many anime are usually adapted from manga, bringing the pages of its creators to the screen rather than being one-shot ideas like many cartoons here. That being said, it's not uncommon to see anime that are created just out of thin air in the same process, but they'll have a more narrative through line to them more than the episodic-based plots that many cartoons here have. For those of y'all who don't know, Dragon Ball is the original series to the very popular and influential Dragon Ball Z. Written by Akira Toriyama and published in 1984, this was actually his third popular series that he had written, and would turn out to be his most influential. The series follows Son Goku, a young martial artist who lives in the Paozu Mountains alone until his world is completely rocked when he gets hit in the face by a car. Driving this car is a selfish but also cunning and intelligent Bulma, who is on the hunt for the seven Dragon Balls. These are round spherical objects that have stars on them numbered from 1 to 7 and can grant any wish if you're able to gather all 7 of them together and summon the dragon. Coincidentally, Goku holds one of the 7 balls as an heirloom from his now deceased grandpa, and not wanting to part with it, he decides to join Bulma on her adventure to collect all 7 of the Dragon Balls and get her wish. What comes to follow is many hijinks and comedic moments, followed by other moments that tackle serious topics such as death, revenge, and even acceptance. Writing off the coattails of his first comedy manga titled Dr. Slump, Toriyama was looking to write another story, one inspired by a Chinese graphic novel that described the 7th century pilgrimage of a Buddhist monk, a journey to the West. He actually enjoyed this story so much that he would go to base many of his characters and story beats off the ones in the novel, creating the manga Dragon Boy. This story had nothing to do with Dragon Ball, but was written a year earlier and did serve as a sort of prototype for what would later become the series. In fact, if you look at the character's personality in Dragon Boy, such as Ting Tong, the main character, and the Princess of the Flower Country, you can see a strong resemblance to the character's personalities of Son Goku and Bulma, respectively. As I kind of said before, many manga are picked up to have their own animated television shows, and Dragon Ball was no different. After a year of production in the Shonen Jump magazine, a production house by the name of Toei Animation picked up the series and animated it from the years 1986 to 1989, totaling 153 episodes. Now, while I want to keep a lot of the focus on the original series, I feel like I'd be leaving out a huge chunk of lore if I didn't at least touch on Dragon Ball's sequel series, Dragon Ball Z. Yes, the name does sound a little ridiculous, but the inclusion of Z at the end was actually meant to signal the end of Dragon Ball, as Toriyama was looking to pursue other projects at the time. However, he did end up working on the project for about another 40 years and is actually still ongoing to this day. He is mostly hands-off at this point, but he still provides character concepts and story outlines for other mangaka or writers to fill in for him. The way I got into the series was actually not too different from the way many other kids here in the States got to know it. and this was through Dragon Ball sequel series that I mentioned earlier. Growing up, I was always jumping between my different aunts and uncles' houses, which meant I got to spend a lot of time with my different cousins. I remember one time in particular, my cousin and I had built a giant pillow fort, and when we finished, he asked me if I wanted to watch the show Dragon Ball Z. And I'll tell you, I was hooked from the moment I watched. It was one of the most action-packed and cool things I'd ever seen. From then on, I had built an obsession with the series. I was playing video games that were Dragon Ball, I bought the manga, and I would even pretend to shoot little blasts out of my hands. It wasn't until years later that I was given access to the internet and discovered that there was a whole series that predated the content that I already knew and loved. After watching the original series, this gave me a further appreciation for the story that was being told by Toriyama, and I'm actually really excited to talk about it next with our guest. I'm here with my longtime friend and fellow MSU alumni, David Levasseur. How are you doing today, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Jonah?
I'm doing pretty well. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? I mean, I know you're an MSU alumni, but, you know, what did you graduate for? What are you doing now?
Well, I recently graduated in May of 2023 with a where I majored in mechanical engineering with a concentration in computational design. And currently, I am still looking for a job somewhere. The hunt's been a little rough, but I'm holding through.
I feel that, man. But, you know, let's get your mind off of that, and let's talk a little bit of the original Dragon Ball. I want to ask, how did you originally get into this series? I'm talking Kid Goku, Bulma, Yamcha. How did you discover Dragon Ball?
It was after watching Dragon Ball Z Kai, Dragon Ball Z, and Dragon Ball GT. I went in the most bass-ackwards version of watching the entire franchise to where I watched the very beginning of it absolutely last. That is until Super content came out, but that's a different conversation.
I think I'm the same way when it comes to that. I also pretty much watched the series backwards. I don't know if I watched Super before I watched Dragon Ball. But I definitely went Dragon Ball Z and then GT and then ended up watching Dragon Ball.
Yeah, and the only way that I found out was, again, through the internet. I think it was mainly Team 4-Star, if you remember them, with their abridged videos.
Yeah. I love their content. I think I knew about Dragon Ball before Team 4-Star. The way I kind of discovered it was when I got my iPod Touch 5. It gave me access to the internet for like the first time. So there was this one game on there. I can't remember the name of it. It was like Dragon Ball something something. And it actually gave you access to like the trainings that Goku did with Roshi, you know, where he did like the milk runs and the,
yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, this is cool and all. This is like a fan game. Come to find out, there's this whole series that came before Z that was Dragon Ball. And I actually ended up spending that entire summer pretty much just watching the original series. So, David, I'm gonna be honest with you here. I wasn't born in the 80s when this came out, but from what I understand, I feel like Dragon Ball was received pretty well. Do you know? You got any ideas on that?
I would say it was received well on release as well. Originally, obviously, we all know, released in Japan first, and I think that's where it got most of its praise. It wasn't until a few years later when it got dubbed in other languages or it just got rights just overseas for people to go on TV, the subbed versions.
Yeah, I think it actually like was one of the main proponents to selling. What was the name of the magazines that they do in Japan? Is it Shonen Jump?
Shonen Jump, yeah.
Yeah.
It was one of the original series that jump-started the popularity of that magazine and pretty much now is one of the, I guess, main benchmarks of this is the type of anime or manga that will be featured in the magazine and will be eventually turned into an anime.
So I think it was like 2 years, no, maybe three after it came out. It was the 1980s. And then like 83 was when the anime came out.
I believe so, somewhere around that window.
Yeah. And I know like it did very well around and like in Japan.
Yeah.
Do you know, did you ever hear about like how they tried to bring it over to America through like the Harmony Gold?
Honestly, I don't know too much about Dragon Ball. I know a little bit more about Dragon Ball Z with Funimation, Christopher Sabat, and him being the forerunner of it all. But I don't know if Sabat was involved with Dragon Ball.
When they actually did bring Dragon Ball over here, they had one called the Harmony Gold dub. And okay. You probably heard of this. They renamed Goku to Zero, and they called Korin Whiskers the Wonder Cat. And I swear to God, that's real.
I think I remember this. Again, calling back to Team Four Star, one of the people on their team delves very much into the history of anime and how it's created.
Yeah, and then for like people who don't know, Team Four Star is kind of like, how would you describe them, David?
YouTubers, or a group of YouTubers that have one channel that did a parody version of Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, and they did it well. I mean, it had a huge following, and I think it is definitely one of the ways you can experience the sequel series Dragon Ball Z, and to a very great extent. Like, you can get the main story beats out of that parody, which is really cool. What I kind of want to touch on as well is, with Dragon Ball, if it was released now, right, how do you see that being received now?
I think overall it would still do pretty well. There would be a few things that would be a little concerning and may raise a few red flags. If the content itself was not changed and it was just re-released entirely but if it was this being its first release, same behaviors, same character structures and everything, a few red flags maybe going up.
Yeah, with the way that I think media has kind of taken just what we generally as an audience have come to expect, I think it's definitely, that's going to be a product that I guess humor is a product of its time. So,
yeah. And these jokes land more in Japan than they do across the seas. I just say it's more of an isolated sense of humor.
It also depends on what if Z was written. You know, I feel like if we had Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball GT, and then Super, and then all of a sudden, hey, let's release this original prequel, I feel like it would be huge, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But if we were starting from the beginning, I don't know how well it would do. I mean, if if it was the same animation and production level, I think it would not do as well. But like, if we're talking like what stuff is coming out now, like Jujutsu Kaisen and anime,
yeah.
if it came out in like that production quality, I don't see why it wouldn't do good, because it does have a general good story. It does have a slow start, though. I mean, I think we can both agree on that.
Yes, that first season, it is a bit slower than the rest of the show. And in all honesty, Roshi's character doesn't really change too much, but the jokes die down and it becomes more of a story driven rather than character driven. It brings a more of a comedic and more lighthearted sense to some of the more serious things that happen in Dragon Ball in general. In the King Piccolo arc, at the very beginning, spoilers, Krillin just gets murked by one of the underlings.
Yeah, I think
for
it was Tambourine.
King Piccolo.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tambourine, yeah. And Goku obviously has a hard time with that. So yeah, if it was released now, I think it would still do well, especially getting after the first season. Mm-hmm. And I've seen plenty of anime that kind of drop the ball a little bit in first season and then just absolutely pick it up and throw it to the end zone or whatever, to where it just takes off.
Now, if we're kind of kicking it to the future, how do you think it'd be perceived in the very, very future? Do you think it is like a staple, or like it has influenced other anime?
Honestly, I think it would just continue to influence more and more anime that it already has.
I have a hot take.
Yeah?
My hot take is, you can tell me if I'm wrong, I think it will be like the Forgotten Child.
I could see that. I could see that. Yeah.
Because think about it now. I mean, we have Z. I feel like Dragon Ball Z is the influencer. Because you know, as you're talking about this, it's the influencer of all of these other media. One Piece. I don't know. Other like Naruto. One Piece, Naruto.
Oh yeah.
Maybe even Bleach. I think there is definitely some inspiration there, you know, from Toriyama. But I don't see any anime that are like Dragon Ball, you know, in terms of like how that gag humor and maybe the original tournament arcs that come on later. But other than that, you don't see Dragon Ball getting talked about much, you know, nowadays. So I don't think that it would change too much in the future. Like it would be, I think it would just be that forgotten series, unfortunately, because everybody's gotten so hyped on Z and then what's coming out now.
Yeah, I can see that. The more you talk about the influences of the animes themselves, it is more on the side of Z. That I very much agree with. I think Dragon Ball itself really set up all those influences to be made. So I can easily see it being the quote-unquote forgotten child.
Yeah, I think it it's pretty, I don't know. I that's just kind of what I think based on what is currently happening or like what people talk about now. Like, I mean, even yourself, how much more familiar with Z are you than with Dragon Ball?
Honestly, I think I know a little bit more about Z.
Yeah. So that's just my take. But hey, David, we do actually have some questions from some fantastic people after this music break, all right?
My name is Michael Simpson.
My name is Nina Cassano.
My name is William Mile.
When I complete my degree, I want to work in the music industry.
I want to work in the animation industry.
I want to be a broadcast production manager.
My name is Michael Simpson.
My name is Nina Cassano.
My name is William Mile.
And I am Kamartsai.
Start your journey at kamartsai.msu.edu.
David, we're back with some questions, and I think we have some answers. You ready for them?
Oh, yeah, I am.
All right. So it looks like our first question here is, when it comes to original Dragon Ball, do you prefer the dub or sub, and why?
For Dragon Ball, I would say that I would prefer the dub because it's what I watched it in originally. I was much younger, maybe about 10-ish years ago, when I watched Dragon Ball, so it has a bit of a more of a nostalgic value. And I believe I was hoping to hear a younger version of some of the voice actors that had voiced the characters in Dragon Ball Z and Z Kai. And I love those voice actors. They did their job amazingly. So I was kind of hoping, and at the time I knew nothing as to how anime was made, who voiced it, or anything. I was just hoping, oh, we might be able to hear a younger version of these people. No, that wasn't it. But I still enjoyed it. And it feels weird to hear the sub versions when you've already watched it in dub and have held that to heart.
I'll agree with that. I think like with anything, it kind of comes down to what you're used to and what you grew up with. I mean, personally, I think I would also prefer the dub. I just grew up watching Dragon Ball Z in the dub, and then when I moved to watching the original, I was also watching the dub, and I'm just used to the voices there. And it's funny because if you look at people who have even listened to like Team Four Stars dub, they actually prefer, if it was their first time watching the series through that lens, those voice actors compared to the Funimation actors who are quote unquote better.
One really funny factoid about that, Christopher Sabat has been on record to say he likes, I forgot his real name, but Lanipater, the YouTuber that's voicing Vegeta, who's the character that Christopher Sabat voices, said he likes Lanipater's voice better for Vegeta.
No way.
I'm not lying. You could look it up. It is hilarious.
All right. Second question. Do we think that Dragon Ball is faithful to the original manga?
I believe that Dragon Ball is faithful to its original manga release.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few filler arcs in there, but I don't think they take it too far.
Yeah, I agree. When it comes to Dragon Ball, from what I understand, they pretty much followed it to a T. Now, I know Toriyama did throw in some time skips there. It did give the anime some things to play with if they wanted to wait for him to come out with more chapters of the actual book. So, like, for example, the time skips. There was one where Goku goes off for 3 years and trains and then comes back to a tournament. All of that in between is all filler. And I think it's really cool that Toriyama wrote that in and that the animation studio was able to make that seem so seamless, because I thought that was just the progression of the actual story. But I come to find out that was all written by like producers and people in the actual animation studio. So that was really cool.
I really liked that part of it as well. Not just like the whole production of it, but like that specific arc. It really set up the final arc for the series.
I agree. I mean, being able to watch the main character, Goku, just get like stronger throughout the throughout that time, and not just have him like, okay, 3 years later, he's stronger now. It's like, okay, we get to actually grow with him and see it. I think that really did a great thing for
see the horrors of the hyperbolic time chamber.
Exactly. Third question for us. Was this the peak of the show, or do we think later series was better?
Honestly, as good as Dragon Ball was, it only laid down the foundation for Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. It's like we kind of talked about before. I think it is the forgotten child of the series that come out. I mean, for better or for worse, GT is remembered, but it's remembered for being absolutely awful. Z is remembered for setting this, like, I think, a standard for what all anime is
called
and manga. And Super, is just known very well because it was Toriyama's step back into the limelight in terms of creating.
He returned after 20 years.
Exactly. So it's like, you know, I see Dragon Ball, it set the foundation for what the entire series became, but I don't think it was the peak of the show.
I love Dragon Ball itself, but I think Z, specifically with the Frieza saga and the Cell saga, I think it finished off with the Cell saga being the peak of the show.
I agree. Anything after that definitely felt like an epilogue, or it just kind of felt like it went a little bit too long. And now for our fourth and final question here, what was the goal of the show? What do you think the show tried to, I guess, instill in people, or what was the message it was trying to deliver?
There were multiple story beats of friendship with all the main characters, and that being very much tested when it came to the King Piccolo arc right at the very beginning. As I said earlier, Krillin just being killed off. It threw Goku in such a rage that it forced him to figure out a way to bring his friend back. He was so distraught that he was willing to alter reality with the Dragon Balls to bring his friend back. With that being one of the main themes, determination is the other, alongside of that. Yeah, he altered reality with the Dragon Balls by bringing Krillin back. He was so determined to do that. That was one of the more stronger convictions that we see throughout the series. But even from the very beginning, as soon as Goku learns about the other Dragon Balls, he's determined to help Bulma find them because she wants to make a wish. And Goku wants to help because it's his grandpa's Dragon Ball, the four-star ball, and he doesn't want to part with it.
The message I kind of got out of it, and maybe just because of different experiences, as home is where your friends are, or I guess maybe even like your friends are your family. Also, I agree, determination for sure. I mean, we see just constant training in this and constant trying to better yourself.
Wanting to be the best fighter there is.
Exactly.
And always trying to hit that benchmark. And there's always, always a new fighter to come along.
And I don't even think that even just applies to fighting. I think that's just to anything in life. It's like just to try to be the best at what you do. And there will always be someone better. And to just not be complacent in what you do and to always strive to do your best. So, with all that being said, David, what do we think? Classic OG Dragon Ball, do we think it holds up?
I would say yes. There are a few things that are problematic, and I've talked about them. But as an anime itself, I think it does hold up.
I'll agree with that. I think it does hold up. I think even with, you know, our previous discussed problems when it comes to certain elements of it, like in terms of its comedy, being of a kind of its time, and just general changes in the media, I think it definitely still holds up today. I mean, it set up the entirety of this grand series that is Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z, GT. Regardless of how those were received, they were received, and they were all large. You know, they weren't small things. They all were big releases. And I think without this one here, and without viewing it, you know, you're just missing out on an experience. And I think it definitely still holds up today. Yeah. Well, hey, David, I want to thank you so much for joining and talking some Dragon Ball with me. It's always fun to geek out about Dragon Ball with another fan.
I always enjoy talking with other fans because I don't get to do that too much.
All right, David, thank you again. And I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me over here.
This episode of the Classic Hold Up podcast was produced, edited, and written by Jonah Guevara. Special thank you to David Levasseur.
Find the Classic Hold Up on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us at Audio Video Land for updates, teasers, and behind-the-scenes content of all Audio Video Land productions. The Classic Hold Up is an Audio Video Land production by digital storytelling students of Michigan State University in collaboration with Impact 89 FM.